Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today. And guess what? I'm going to tell you what I didn't tell my guest, that there are two shows, two, just two shows you do not want to be on. That's my Monday show and my Friday show. Mondays, I had way too much sleep. Fridays, I have not had enough sleep. So only God knows what I'm going to say on a Monday or Friday, as if I'm tame Tuesday through Thursday. But this Friday, especially, I've been celebrating all week. My birthday, I turned 45 on Wednesday. I don't think I've slept since Tuesday. So if I started asking questions that have absolutely nothing to do with what our guest is talking about, that's why. Okay, that's why. I'm just letting you know in advance. But before I go ahead and introduce today's guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I ask you to do every day, Monday through Friday, not just Fridays, every day. And that is for you to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone in your family, someone in your neighborhood, someone in your network who needs this information. Maybe they're a new entrepreneur, maybe they're a new author, or someone who just needs assistance with their personal life. But they won't have this information unless you go ahead and share the show with them. So please, by all means, share the show, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and introducing the show to your friends, I'm going to introduce you to a dear friend of mine. I met this amazing lady a couple of years ago, and from the first time we met, we were fast friends. She is incredible, and she's also someone whose journey has changed over time. And each step she takes, she continues to grow and improve and help the world. Miss Renee Carlson. Renee has a mission to help families with special needs learn how to calm the mind and body through mindfulness, routines, reflexology, essential oils, and sensory experiences. She's also going to talk about her book and her organization, Sensory Bee. Good morning, Renee. How are you?
Good morning. I'm wonderfully well. And today is Autism Awareness Day, and I'm so glad to share it with you. So
Thank you.
this is one of my favorite days of the year. We get to educate people about autism and help them understand what's going on in the world today.
Now, with that said, for people who aren't familiar with autism, can you give us a little bit of background on it? Especially since for some people, it's only really became very prevalent in the news over the last few years. Prior to that, it wasn't really taken serious, from my understanding.
Yes, ma'am. So in 2020, approximately one in 54 children were diagnosed on the autism spectrum. Boys are four times more likely to be diagnosed with autism than girls. And that is just because of the behaviors that are prevalent during that diagnosis. Girls mask our symptoms. We want to fit in. We don't want to stand out. We want those girlfriends, and we'll do whatever it takes to hide our inadequacies so that we can fit in with the crowd. And that is a part of the reason why boys are diagnosed more than girls. Autism affects all ethnic and socioeconomic groups. Unfortunately, minority groups tend to be diagnosed later, and they have less services because we're not doing that early intervention. A lot of these, nearly two-thirds of our children with autism have been bullied, and a lot of our children wander and bolt from safety. So a lot of this, I'm working on creating safety and security tips for families. We're working on education and just getting the word out of what is available for the community at large.
Renee, do you feel, and this is, I'm just asking your opinion, you mentioned the minority groups or the minority youth. Do you feel that diagnosis, because many of them are more diagnosed with behavioral issues as opposed to this is a medical issue?
Absolutely, because ADHD is one of the co-diagnoses that go with autism. More than likely, the child will be diagnosed with ADHD or ADD, which in turn re actually means that their behavior is not adequate in class and they can't focus and keep on track. And so they'll become the quote unquote problem children of the class. So they are misdiagnosed often. It takes a long time to get the diagnosis. It is a hard diagnosis to get.
Very interesting. Now, there was a personal reason why you decided to go on this journey. Would you tell our audience a little bit about your personal journey?
I have a daughter who is autistic. So she is one of the rare few that has been diagnosed with autism. She was diagnosed at the age of 6. We knew pretty early on that she had the diagnosis, but she didn't meet all of the criteria until later on in life, like I said. And so we chose to treat her as an autistic child early on and sought interventions as early as we could. She is an ABA. She has OT and speech.
Mm-hmm. As a parent, how what was that process? How was it like for you? How did you survive? What did you do for self-care?
I grabbed every moment that I could, whether it was going to the bathroom with the door locked a little bit longer than necessary, a little bit longer in the shower. I worked with my friends. Please just sit with my child for just a few minutes so I could have a moment. I used the resources available. I got respite. I got the aids that needed, and I got the therapies that my child needed so that we could work together as a community to make my child stronger, because it does take a village.
Mm-hmm. It definitely takes a village. Speaking of villages, Renee, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Miss Janelle Massey. Janelle is an educator, licensed mental health therapist, and school counselor who is redefining the way we view and practice empathy. With a background in crisis counseling and entrepreneurial leadership, Janelle is fostering empathetic connections through professional development lectures, young entrepreneur mentorship, and through Her Hub, an online community connecting women, resources, and businesses. She'll be, thank you for joining us, Janelle. Janelle, good morning.
How are you? Good morning. I'm doing well. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'm happy to have you. Now, before we get into who you are and what you do, when you heard Renee speak, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I can identify as a school counselor and clinical therapist for 16 plus years, especially with the minority diagnosis. Oftentimes, there's a stigma associated in the Black community. I will speak on that community. That causes us not to really seek out or minimize what we're seeing in our children. And so, yes, I can totally identify with that and what a need more than ever to really kind of relearn and redefine empathy in so many different ways, especially empathy towards children with diagnoses and families as well.
So tell us about yourself, Janelle. Who are you and what are you passionate about?
I am a mom. I'm a therapist. Actually, let me back up. I'm a mom of a daughter who is an alopecian. She was diagnosed with alopecia universalis 4 years ago. I also have another daughter. I am a wife of a college basketball coach. And I myself was a former Division I basketball player. And I am such an advocate for small women-owned businesses, so much that I founded an organization here in Toledo, Ohio, called Her Hub, where we are a resource for all things women, empowering women, and especially with entrepreneur efforts. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm doing. And I'm a new author.
Congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations. Yes. Tell us about your book.
So it's entitled The Miseducation of Empathy, and it's a half self memoir, half self help. And so the first part of the book, I go through a couple of stories of my life where I was rediscovering empathy and very confused about empathy. And then the second part, I share what I believe is revolutionary on how we should look at empathy. So I dismantle those metaphors of putting yourself in your own shoes. And I believe that we need to keep ourselves in our own shoes in order to create space for the other person to be able to say what they're saying and us validate them in our own shoes. And so, yeah, I've published it. It's out, and I'm excited about people reading it and what people are thinking.
Why empathy? I mean, people go through so many different journeys, and then at the end of the journey, they go, you know what? I've learned this. I've learned patience. I've learned compassion. I've learned. Why empathy for you?
For me, I think empathy is the foundation. And so when we talk about other things like patience and forgiveness or tolerance, I believe you can't have any of those things. I believe they are the byproduct of connection and understanding and empathy. And so as I was, especially in my marriage, being married to someone who travels, and it's a hard lifestyle, being married to a college coach, I was like, how can I speak his love language? How can I be more forgiving? How can I not be so resentful? And it all boiled down to one word, and that was, I need to be more connected and he needs to be more understanding, and that is empathy.
Wow, I like that. Wonderful answer. Now, Jonelle, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who is also incredible. I'm having a wonderful time this morning. Ms. Marcia Gleit. Marcia is a speaker, entrepreneur, and a master at creating effective leaders. After 30 years of working in C-suite positions, she found her passion for helping others grow in their personal and professional lives. As a success coach, Marcia works to move her clients from settling to succeeding. Marcia couples her business prowess with her leadership development training skills while creating a humorous and fun environment for clients to develop, grow, and prosper. Good morning, Marcia. How are you?
Good morning. I am so grateful to be here with these wonderful guests. And thank you to Renee, because she turned me on to your show and she invited me to be here with her today. So I'm really excited to be here today. Yeah.
How cool. I love it when I have returning guests. And when those guests bring a friend, that's even more amazing. This is wonderful. So Marcia, who are you? What are you passionate about?
Who am I? Well, I'm an international speaker. I am an author. My new book, You Can't Be Good to Them Until You Are Good to You. It's a 30-day guide to be a healthier, wealthier you. And I'll come back to that in just a moment. I spent 30 years in corporate America going to that job every single day. And it starts to crush your soul when you're not happy. And I said, I'm going to break away from that. And I wanted to have a passion for helping leaders who really impact the next generation of leaders. And we all do that in our own way. I do it as a mom, as a wife, as a coach, as a community leader, as a board of director, and whatever it is I'm doing, I put my whole self in to make sure that you are the best that you can be. And it's really about putting yourself first and taking care of you so that you can help and support everybody else that's around you.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And what's interesting to me is I'm starting to see more of a shift and a change, because I remember years back when I would get certain jobs and I would say, you know what, I can't work under these conditions. Like, this is no fun. And my family was like, Sharifa, at some point you have to grow up. Life is not about having fun. I was like, my life is, you know? And so when I'm listening to you in your bio, you talk about effective leadership, but then at the end of the day, you also talk about the importance of having fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's really about the amount of stress that you're allowing into your life. Mm-hmm. And I believe that fun and laughter is a way to continue to reduce stress. So when you're in that middle management position and you are managing up and managing down at the same time, you're sitting in this middle with everybody pulling at you. And what's left? There's nothing left. So what I like to do is when I teach about self-confidence and happiness, right? Then you're able to delegate. You're able to bring the team along. You're able to take accountability for the team because you trust the team and they trust you. It's said that 80%, and I just spoke at Microsoft last week, which was like a David and Goliath moment, right? I felt like this David, right, going in and Microsoft being this big Goliath. But when I went in with the intention of just having some fun and being happy and like enjoying the fact that here I am on Microsoft stage, I said that was like success for me. And it is like I put it all out there because I had the self-confidence. I knew that I could speak, right? I could talk to any little dot, right? Camera right now, because everything's virtual, right? Ladies and gentlemen, we don't get to be in front of, a live audience. We will soon, but not yet. So I've learned in the last year in speaking is I'm speaking to the green dot, right? And sometimes you see the faces, but at Microsoft, it was all the little circles with their initials. And it was like, how do you engage with circles? But I learned that I had to engage with the chat. And the more questions I was able to ask the audience, the more information I got about them and I could speak to them. And that's what I do when I work with my clients. And I was honored to work with Renee, and I hope she doesn't mind me saying that, as a client. And our friendship, it was a friendship, and then we had a client relationship and then a friendship, and it just kept developing. And the more that we worked together, the more that she grew, the more that her businesses grew, and the more that we realized that special needs, and our nonprofit, Special Needs Sprouts, which we both sit on the board of directors, is so amazing to be able to support special needs children. But what did we learn from that? Was that as a parent, our children are going through the same things. So my challenges were the same as Renee's challenges. I mean, she was a little more challenging, but what was able to show was that she wasn't in it alone, because my children were experiencing the same things in their lives, which helped us connect and really helped us be able to help parents of special needs children, right? Because at some point they're gonna go through the same experiences that neurotypical children, is that what
we neurotypical mean? Yes,
neurotypical children. See, I learned, see, but I got to learn and I got to grow from my experiences with Renee. And when you come into a partnership or you come into a conversation like this, right, we all can take something away and grow, and that's what I love to do. Right.
We're definitely going to take something away today. We're going to take notes. We're going to grow. We're going to meet some new friends. And I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Albert Goldson. Albert is executive director of the Cerulean. Say it for me, Albert.
Cerulean.
That's it. Council, a New York City-based think tank that provides contrarian and often prescient geopolitical risk assessments. Mr. Goldson is a former public policymaker and USDHS officer. He is a member of a wide spectrum of professional organizations that include the Overseas Press Club of America. He's a board member, American Society of International Lawyers, ASIL, and the Hedge Fund Association. Good morning, Albert. How are you?
Good morning. I know people will have questions. What does cerulean mean?
I can't even say cerulean.
Cerulean is the color blue. It's like a sky. It's like a sky blue.
Wow.
So that's always that mystery. What does cerulean mean? I've heard it. I've read it. What the heck does it mean? But that is the meaning of Cerulean Council. I have, you know, extensive experience in government, and as you can imagine, that sort of employment can be quite limiting in terms of what you can do, what your imagination, your personal and professional growth. So several years ago, I started my own firm, the Cerulean Council, and it focuses on two things. You mentioned the geopolitical aspect, and yes, I do cover a lot of the major events that are going on today. And I take it from a contrarian perspective. A lot of the information either has not been mentioned by mainstream media or social media, which I bring up certain hidden insidious dynamics, or there are other issues that have not been dealt with in depth. So I discuss that. So I take a contrarian perspective and provide counterintuitive solutions. So it's a very different approach, the kind of the underbelly of what's going on, just to give people a realistic view as to what's going on. The other component is more to the individual. I'm a contributing writer, and a lot of it in my on my website, thecerulliancouncil.com, under the folder Human Perspectives, focuses on individuals in what we're going through today. And a number of articles touch upon that. It's, to put it bluntly, tough love. It gives a very clear and distinct picture of what's going on, so that each individual has a better assessment, where am I, what am I doing, and how can I proceed from there? It provides them a solid, more solid foundation and mindset, because there's so much uncertainty going on today. And just a sample of those articles, a recent one I just published yesterday was called the Diversity Policies, the Illusion of Inclusion, the veneer of the diversity policies being pushed by corporations. Some others including body language in the digital workplace. Another one, the stratospheric stress of what's going on today, not just from a psychological perspective, but from an individual perspective, what, again, a lot of people are not talking about. Remote working, it's the, we're prisoners of high tech. And also, what's also important, a lot of things, because we're working remotely, a lot of things by the C-suite, et cetera, are happening behind the scenes, unknowns to quite a number of people. One of my articles discusses that. It's called The Silence of the Whistleblowers. Whistleblowers have to be on site to pretty much get a very good idea of any unethical or illegal activities that are going on for them to bring forth to the proper authorities. We don't have that ability right now. So it's a big gray area, and people should be aware of what's going on. And again, how it pertains to them individually, what they can do going forward.
So you were the captain of the debate club.
Yes. Exactly. I'm the guy who nobody really wants to hear, but gosh, because I don't have a supervisor, shareholders, or anything holding me back, I could be pretty much blunt and upfront about things. Of course, I do it diplomatically, but it's put in such a way that everyone can understand, and it gives everyone a completely different perspective and gets them thinking.
Well, that's good. The way you say it, it just sounds so positive. But the word contrary, especially, people really have used it in a negative connotation, where if someone will say, well, you know what, Albert's always contrary. He's always bringing up, you know. So what I find it interesting, I did an interview the other day with a stand-up comedian, and it was a wonderful show. But one of the things we discussed is when the media, major news, gives certain opinions, I personally always go to certain comedians to get what we consider the truth, you know, their opinion. And so it seems to me that's like a lane that you're in, where all the media, all the news is saying one thing. It's like, okay, well, what is Albert saying? What does Albert have to say about this?
Yeah, the big challenge is, of course, they go left, I go right. The difficult part about presenting a contrarian idea is that people are, human nature is we're lazy. And what happens, you have to teach people to unlearn certain practices that they've developed over a lifetime for them to be able to grasp a different perspective, a different opinion. Not to say that they would necessarily agree with me, but just acknowledge that there is, you know, a different way to, let's say, resolve their problem or to deal with their issues. And that applies, you know, in their professions, in their social life, in their family life, what have you. So this is a universal application.
So we have to dig through your blog post, because we have to find something that you've written that's contrary, or being a contrarian on children. Do you ever write any topics on children? We got a lot of children's conversations going on today, Albert.
Well, it's on education. And how that's developed through the generations. For example, everyone is jumping on the younger generation for being superficial, for following social media herd mentality. And in fact, every single generation has been like that. It's been supercharged in today's society simply because of technology. Mm-hmm. If the older generations had the technology that the younger generation has today, it would be the same thing. Also the breakup as far as families are concerned, because you have the older generation who are unfortunately getting, you know, much, much older, and they're not passing along the fundamentals to the younger generation. They're not connecting with them. They don't exactly have to, let's say, love and like them necessarily. There's always tensions between generations, but that information is not necessarily being passed along. So in terms of the youth children, let's say, or today's parents with their young children, that something has to be, you know, passed on to them in a very powerful way, so that the today's children, or let's say young adults, can actually think for themselves instead of being told what to do by their peers or by the media or by so-called authority figures.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem very contrary to me. Let's see, Janelle, what did you think?
I agree a lot with him. I think we are kindred spirits here, but yeah, one of the things that I talk about in my book is that, you know, with empathy, it's so interesting how a lot of my teachers in my buildings believe that it's innate. It's either innate, they should just have it if they're decent human beings, or, you know, it's like they should just be able to do it without any like specific skills on how to do it. So as Albert was talking, I was thinking, yes, we need skills to teach our children certain things. Those are things that need to be passed on. And I talk about that because a lot of times, you know, in the classrooms I see and they say, well, what if you were in her shoes or in his shoes? And how do you think that you would feel? And oftentimes that kind of intervention just simply fails. And so I'm saying, stop saying that. You know, it's not about, you know, God forbid a therapist says, you know, sift through feelings and get to the thoughts of things. And it's not that they're not important. They reveal what we're thinking, but we've got to get past this, you know, feeling, vicarious feelings. That's what I call it, you know, in the sharing of this, or teleporting, or trying to imagine. And let's get to the investigation of what people are thinking, you know, and that's where we connect with each other. Those are skills that we've got to learn in the world that we live in today. And so, yeah, I talk a lot about the myths, and because we have to unlearn a lot of those, and we learn the right way to connect and understand with people.
Deep. Renee, you're nodding your head, you're nodding away. What are your thoughts?
I think it's very true. In the society today, we have a lot of issues that we need to be able to take to our young families, and we need to teach them empathy. We need to teach them how to think for themselves, and we need to give them the words and the tools to understand their emotions and how they are feeling at a moment's notice. That is one of the most difficult challenges I have with my children today, is how to let them understand what other people are thinking, because they don't get that. That is not something that is natural. To try and get them to conform to the world is a very challenging aspect. You know, they don't understand social cues. They don't understand sarcasm. They don't understand a lot of the niceties of the world. And, you know, you're trying to explain them, and they're like, this just does not make sense. This does not compute. And on a daily, it is a challenge for our kiddos to try to adapt to the world at large. And if we as parents don't give them the words that they need to express, I am hurt, I am hungry, I am angry, I am tired, and I am stressed out, they will not be able to explain that to somebody when they need those skills at that moment in time. I had a birthday party with three autistic little girls, and we had huge moments where it was just too loud. But, you know, she wasn't able to say, can we just turn down the volume? And all of the moms had to read the body language of what was going on instead of that child being able to say, hey, can we just turn the music off? It's a little too loud.
That's an excellent point, but I want to go just a little bit back to what you were saying, Renee, about allowing them to verbalize what they're feeling and what they're going through. But also, I think there's an aspect of them verbalizing and understanding how they feel about what other people are saying or how other people are making them feel. How do you do that?
It's a lot of processing, and it's a lot of going over the situation after the effect. So we will go and we will role play situations that they have been in to kind of talk to them and give them those words that they need to say. Wow, do you remember when that happened? This is how I felt. You may have felt this way or this way or this way, but everyone's allowed to have their feelings. But this is how we should handle it appropriately. And next time you can say this or this. And giving them the words that they need to be able to communicate effectively out in society.
Wow. Marcia. Eric, go ahead.
I you know, I don't even know where to start, you guys. You just, one thing about me is I actually happen to be a very visionary person, and I take everything in from such a high level. It's just where I've learned to the frequency where I am at. And so I listened to Albert, I listened to Jonelle and to Renee, and I'm like, we're sitting at a place right now where anybody, right, whether we're young, whether we're middle-aged or we're old, we don't express our feelings at all. And so I actually think, and like the whole idea of conforming to society, isn't that what we're all talking about? Whether you're talking geopolitical or you're talking about what you hear from the media or what you see on social media, we're all trying to conform to society. And what does that do? It makes us shove down our feelings, and it makes us really unhappy, and it makes us going through life kind of numb. So when I'm with Renee and her children, I actually applaud and love that whether they are socially, correct, they tell you what they're feeling at any time. And so why are we telling them that that's not appropriate? I mean, obviously some of the language we need to make sure is appropriate, but I would much rather know that she, that her body language is the noise is too high and scream out the noise is too loud versus me going through my life. And I'm doing a lot of energy work. I know Renee, she's like smiling over there. Because it took me a long time to realize that about the energy and the frequency that I went through my life trying to play a role or trying to be somebody that I thought everybody else wanted me to be. Right? My parents, my siblings, my teachers, we do it with high achievers, right? Oh, they're high achievers. So they need to take every AP class and you're supposed to get A's in every class, right? Well, I'm a math person. I'm an analytical. I'm that brain. And I never know if it's the left or the right, but the old social sciences and the language arts, that was where I struggled. So I grew up thinking you can't write, you can't communicate, you can't because you belong in this math-based world. Well, somebody put that on me and I'm now 56 years old and I'm finally peeling all that crap away and saying, no, I can sell, I'm empathetic, I can relate to people, I can write, I wrote a book, right? I can put content on my website. I can connect with people, right? But what are we telling our children, right? So we were the helicopter parents, right? And, baby boomers were the helicopter parents. We know what's best for our children. And the millennials, which something that Albert talked about, and they go like, oh, the millennials, they're just selfish. Well, why are they selfish? Well, they're not really selfish. They're living in a self world, because that's what we taught them. There are no losers. We're all winners, right? Mm-hmm. And Jonelle, you should understand that as an athlete, we're not all winners. Somebody wins the game and somebody loses the game. Right. And we taught them as kids, as long as we all did our best, we're all winners. And the first time that they're told that they're not the best, they're like, oh, this isn't right. I am the best. So they're right. going so many- through, and now they're raising their children in a way of the heart. This is the cold, hard facts.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, we have a lot of different directions that we're going in through at different times. So some of the things that you said that were interesting to me, Marcia, when you talked about your voice, and I really believe that's generational, because in prior generations, we raised our children with the belief that children are to be seen and not heard. Now, my children are 24 and 27. And when I was raising my children, my parents would say to me, you're trying to be your child's friend. That's what they would tell our generation. You want to be their friend. Be their parent, don't be their friend. And I always say, and I always told my children, you can say whatever you want to me. You cannot say it however you want to say it. You still have to be respectful, but I have to allow them to have a voice because they have thoughts, they have opinions, and they're humans. And so that's why I see a lot more when you say selfish in those generations is that they're more, they have their self-interest in mind, so they can have a voice to say, this is what I want, this is what I feel, and actually express that. So yeah, I think it's a wonderful thing, because I believe when you take away a child's voice, and I am sexist, I always admit that, so especially a female child, take away a little girl's voice, you've now taken away her right to say no. You've taken her right to set appropriate boundaries, and then steamroll over those. I got a there, Janelle. What you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, and it's so crazy. And I posted this the other day. Like, we want to use fancy words like emotional intelligence. Let me tell you what that is. It's called social skills. And if we continue to teach it to our children, we won't have adults who don't know how to regulate their emotions and don't know what self-awareness and emotional awareness is. It's, you know, we're reinventing the wheel, and we're spending too much time redefining terms when the term is good enough all by itself if we work on it.
Yes.
That's where we need to be at. This is old-fashioned social skills. And our world is affected by adults who have not learned them. Mm-hmm. And it's because of miseducation of certain terms as well. In defining things by vague metaphors and things that just don't have any substance to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Absolutely. And it reminds my daughter's a high school math teacher right now. And I have a podcast on Wednesdays, Hump Day Happens. And she came on as, it's all about fun and laughter. If I can make you laugh, then I've done my job. She came on as a guest. And my show used to be started out as Wednesday Wisdoms. And she texted me. She goes, Mom, you know, I'm really wise and I have a lot of wisdom. Can I be a guest on your show? And my first initial thought was, absolutely. And then I thought, oh my God, my daughter, what is going to come out of her mouth, right? And it's, I'm like, oh, you know? And I had her on, and they continue, right? Don't hear, you know, my daughter's almost 30. Don't these adults like just continue to floor you, right? So yes. Like, you've done something right. You just don't realize it for 30 years, right? And I tell that Renee all the time, you're not going to realize what you did right until they're out in the world doing what they can do. And we go on, and she started talking about COVID and what you could do for your kids, and what the, and I taught it for, like, wanted to talk about it from a teacher's perspective. What can the parents do to help you as a teacher, remote learning, especially high schoolers, right? It's a lot different, the elementary kids, as the high schoolers, because you give them their autonomy, you let them do what they want. And she talked about social emotional learning, and that they're teaching this in the classroom now. Teachers have to teach your children how to be social and about their emotions. That was like mind blowing to me.
So when it blew your mind, did it blow your mind and you went, oh my God, they shouldn't do that? Or you went, oh, I'm so happy that they are doing that?
You know what? I said I was so thrilled, and it really connected her and I in a lot of ways, because I'm teaching adults social emotional learning, right? I'm teaching them how to live in the world and know your feelings and say no. And you're, especially women, like you said, Sharif, right? Women have to learn their boundaries and have to learn to say no, right? Because we are the ones that we take everything on, and we've learned to take everything on. And we learn this starting from the age of eight. At the age of eight is when it is shown that that is when, especially little girls, stop feeling free and start feeling that they have to live in the rules of society. And that's when we start taking on this need to people please, and to be loved. You know, the only way to love is by giving and undervaluing ourselves. And then the hormones set in, and then these poor girls, right? They're just, I mean, crap. Can you imagine if we knew how to get rid of all that crap, right, at age 8 or 9 or 10? And that's why it's so important to me is to impact the leaders that are impacting the next generation of leaders. Because what we do as leaders today, our voice, and if we, the more authentic we can be and the more authentic and truthful we can be to the girls and the boys that are growing up in the society that we're leaving them, that's going to be the impact they're going to have on their generation and their next generation of leaders. Absolutely. Their next generation of leaders.
What one of the insidious parts of technology is that there are quite a number of more people than you can imagine, young people who really want to break free from that little social box that society has placed them in. Mm-hmm. You can call it society, you can call it peer pressure, for example. And one of the more powerful elements is fear. They are fearful of being criticized. Now, there's one thing back in the day, you're criticized by a couple of friends, you can go elsewhere to get support. Nowadays, with everyone so connected on social media, just the fact that you think or present something differently, you have dozens upon dozens of people not only criticizing you, just basically throwing hate speech at you. Who are you? Who are you to believe that this, that, or the other? And they box you in to, for example, your gender, race, ethnic type, et cetera, that, well, you're not supposed to be able to do that because you are, or who do you think you are? So that is compounded by today's technology. Just not like one or two, you know, people who are just knuckleheads and you have the support of your parents and other friends. Here you basically have almost a dark army of people, you know, suppressing you and keeping you in your box, particularly if you're different from anybody, from everyone else, whether it's race, ethnic background, sexual orientation, et cetera.
Now, let me just ask you this, Albert, because I'm going to go ahead on a certain assumption that someone who is a contrarian has been a contrarian all of their life. So it may seem simple and part of what you do now, but growing up as a child, you know, the common view was to do one thing, and Albert's over here like, no, I think this is the way to do it. It couldn't have been that easy for you, correct? Or am I incorrect?
No, well, you make a choice. I was always an individualist. Mm-hmm. I was always a contrarian. But I also must, you know, admit that, you know, my family encouraged me to seek my own path. So it's just not just myself. It has to come from someplace. And it usually comes from family, relatives, very close people to encourage you to do that. Otherwise, I could have taken a different path and kind of follow the herd and be very, very miserable. There are consequences for taking that individual path in which you're going to be alone a good deal of the time, but on the upside, you're basically following your true calling, whatever that true calling might be, or sometimes it's callings, because as you know, people go through different parts of their lives as far as their careers, what they do, their professions, etc. But you're heading down a particular path in which you're finding options and you're not afraid to grab that option if that's something that you would like to pursue, because we all run into crossroads. You're going to take the left or the right, or you can go, you know, wherever you want to go. Mm-hmm. So again, you still need the support of family, close people to be able to kind of jumpstart that and to keep it going. Otherwise it will die out. Again, it starts right in the home as always.
Yeah. You know, I have a question on that, Albert, if you don't mind. So we're celebrating, it's the week of Passover. And when we sit down at our Seder, we talk about the four questions and there's four sons. And one son is the contrary son. And what at our table, my dad, who was always the patriarch of our family, contrary never had a had a positive connotation. It has a negative connotation. And so, you know, that like for us, my dad believed in being the contrary son, right? Or daughter in our case, because we were three girls. But although we knew that he, like that was the one he respected the most, it was also the one that you hid the most, because you don't want to be contrary out in society, right? And well, I find it interesting because it is the contrary, the person that's saying this isn't totally true, or this is a whole nother opinion that may not be the societal opinion, the left and the right. So as you were talking, is how, where do you find the truth under all of that? And is it your truth? Is it you being contrary? Or is it a matter of it's your opinion on everything that you're hearing and you come with your voice?
Well, the answer to that is my perspective on what is going around, because there isn't any absolute truth. I'm taking those perspectives that I think would benefit me the best. And being contrarian, of course, does have the connotation of being kind of a downer or negative, but it's yin yang. It has a lot of positive perspectives to it. So for example, you can be contrarian, just don't tell anybody. So that really dampers down a lot of the criticism. So if you want to pursue a different path, personally, professionally, if in your case, you were in business for such a long time and then you wanted to go more to the creative side, you don't have to tell anyone about it. You leave that field and you're pursuing something else. And you can basically do that on the down low. So you're not obligated to tell anyone that you're taking a different turn. Also to bring it for the positive side, you know, we're running through some very rough times here, you know, with the pandemic and all the turbulence that it's causing. You take a really good look at it, and quite a number of people can try to kind of sit back and say, you know, I could reset my life. Mm-hmm. Take a good inward look at what have I been doing, and this is a perfect opportunity for change. You just sit back, meditate, however methods that you use. And this is just not a 1 week process. A number of people have quite a number of months to say, well, what would I really like to do? How can I change, myself? What is my purpose? So this is a great reset individually for everyone to say, gee, this is, you know, there's no excuse for me not to seriously consider taking a different path. I don't like this path. It's stressful, or it's boring, or I'm heading towards a dead end. I could be doing something different. How do I go about doing it? So it's a really wonderful reset for everybody.
Yes,
it reminds me of
two things. Like, one of my favorite expressions is Edmund Burke's, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. So the contrarian is the person who steps in and says, no, you can't do that. And then it also reminds me of one of my favorite childhood stories, which is The Emperor's New Clothes. So if anyone's ever read that, it's the same idea. This little boy is a contrarian because everybody else had agreed that the emperor's new clothes were so wonderful and so beautiful and so amazing, but it took the innocence of youth to be able to say, wait a minute, the emperor's naked. So that's the personality that you embody to me, Albert. I want to come back to you, Renee. I know you wanted to say something, but before Albert started speaking, I saw Janelle started to speak. Were you ready, or did you want me to go to Renee?
No, and I'm not sure what I was talking about before, but I think it's just interesting how we're talking about acknowledgement of full self, mm-hmm. right? So everything that about us, we at least acknowledge and give ourselves permission to be that at that moment. And then that's where the foundation of growth happens. And then we can take different paths like Albert was talking about. So yeah, I have an ABC model in my book, and A is acknowledge, and then B is kind of bypass the feelings, because sometimes feelings can be very subjective, they can be reactive, they can be all kinds of things. But if we can sift through that and bypass the feelings to get to and connect to our thoughts, we can get to our purpose and our new paths. So that's self-empathy, but we can do that with others with the ABC model as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Renee.
So I definitely was able to really relate with what Albert said, because I've actually been able to do that within my career. When you first met me, Sharifa, I was a massage therapist, and being able to take a step aside of what I thought my path and my journey was going to be of fixing bodies and healing the body from the outside in, and really going from the inside out so that you have that total body healing, has really redefined my personality, my range, and who I can affect. Now, I was able to write a book too. I get to shamelessly promote my book, A Be Like Me. And it is the story of my daughter and her journey through autism and what it looks like, but also my journey through this. So my reflections in this book is how I felt and my coming to terms with being a special needs mom, but realizing I had a lot to in common with her. And hey, maybe I was dealing with the same thing and I wasn't ready to acknowledge it at that point until I was done with my story and her story, and being able to share that with the world and realizing, as much as massage is a great tool, until you're able to heal your inside, you're not going to heal your outside. And representing who you need to be and in your fullest is what it's all about and what we are wanting to give to the next generation.
I love me some Renee. You are so amazing. I'm always happy when you are on
the show. I just have to do a shout out to Renee, because I've known Renee, was it almost 4 years now, Renee? Boy, the person that she is today is not the person I met 4 years ago. And I think what's amazing is that she's been was open to walking the journey and asking for help to help her get through this journey. And sometimes just having a coach or having a mentor to be able to help you ask that next question that you are not ready to ask yourself, by no means. And that allows you to peel the onion even deeper. And Janelle, I know you, as a therapist, you can relate to that. And people say, what's the difference between a coach and a therapist? And you know, I look at it as, we're going to take where you are today and we're going to move forward. But we always have to look back a little bit, right? Because there is something that's happened. There was something in our lives that caused us to act the way that we're acting. And the only way we can make change is to acknowledge what it is and know that we're willing to make change. And that's what I just loved about the journey that I was so fortunate to take with Renee. And boy, I can't tell you what she's done for me, but I'm going to be shameless here and I'm going to talk about how I was able to help her. And it's through finding that person that you can really trust to be able to lay it all on the table. And because the only way that a therapist or a coach or anybody can help somebody else through their, what they consider their mess or their boulder standing right in front of them, is by being able to say, these are all the pieces, and able to answer all the questions that are asked. Because then we can make the change, the small changes that you need. And then there's smaller changes, and then small changes. And then before you know it, you go from somebody who was in a thought massage therapist who was very successful at it, to now having three companies, I think you have now. I mean, because she still has massage, and you have more than three companies, but the things that are her passion that she's following is just absolutely amazing. And anybody can do that when they're open to change and open to being honest with themselves.
Yes, ma'am. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Albert.
I think it's just something unique. I did write an article called Flash Angels, and it just followed up on what you had mentioned, Marcia, that we all receive messages to problems and issues that we have. And you might find yourself just approach or a stranger just chats you up and provides you information to questions that you haven't thought about. And that opens up, you know, a channel for you to really either, you know, deal with issues that you have or create a new pathway that you can pursue. So again, the question of being open, listening to people, and it will always occur with someone who you could not possibly imagine would quote unquote know you. And the ironic part is you meet this person and you never meet them again. It's like just are there for maybe just anywhere from 30 seconds to a minute and a half and will drop some pearls of wisdom. And if you're really listening closely, it will sink in and it would start to unlock a lot of doors that you didn't think existed, and then you can move forward.
I would love to see that article, Albert. Are you able to put it in the comments after we finish the show on the Roundtable Talk show page?
Yes, I'll have to just search and put the link for that, and I could do that.
Thank you. The Roundtable Talk show on Facebook, it'll come up. You'll see the show because we're live right now. So it's right there, and just place it in the comments, please. Thank you, because I want to read that. That sounds really good. Janelle, what do you have for us?
I just want to just say that I am very passionate about empathy and connection and understanding. And as I sit here on the panel, I already know that Renee and I are connected of mothers who probably went through immense guilt and received a lot of sympathy when we needed empathy instead. These are the things of experiences that we need to be able to share with one another and connect with one another. I am super excited about the archetypes that I've discovered in empathy. And as we were discussing, I was thinking Marsha's probably a blanket, probably a crossing guard. And so there's five different types that I think are revolutionary with being able to have the language to say, this is what I need at this point. I need an operator to direct my call and give me the resources that I need. That is empathy that I need right now. And so you can get all of that in my book, The Miseducation of Empathy, and follow me on social media, Janelle Massey, and my website, janellemassey.com, because we're going to do this together. This is something that we are going to identify together. Brené Brown did vulnerability. Janelle Massey is bringing up empathy, and we are just going to be a better world because of the work that we do collectively.
Amen.
And sister.
Thank you. Marsha, what do you have?
Oh my God. I got to do more of these shows because I've just been.
Come back.
All right. You know it. You might see me every week here because it's just amazing. To be able to bring five people together from different places in their lives and then be able to have a conversation like this is absolutely mind-blowing and amazing. So thank you for that. Speakwithmarsha.com. You know, whatever it is that you are challenged with today, you don't have to be stuck. You don't have to settle. There are infinite possibilities out there for you. And that's what I want to help you do. I do a 30-minute discovery call. We'll get on, we'll see how do we move that boulder? It's going to be quick and it's going to be rapid. And boy, it's going to be fun because I don't hang up unless we're laughing, girls and boys. It's about laughter. Let laughter allow you to get your ears, your shoulders up from your ears down to where they belong. I learned that right there. See, she taught me so much. Speakwithmarsha.com. And I'd love to have a conversation. And maybe we can have one just like this, you and me.
Absolutely. Got to make it happen. Thank you, Marsha. Renee, what did you think of today's show?
I loved the show. And thank you so much for allowing me to be here on one of my favorite days of the year. If you would like to know more about A Sensory Bee, follow us online at Facebook or on my website where you can get some of our products. But we are really looking to create a community of special needs moms that need that support, that connection, and that acceptance. And we're doing that through our Beehive. And if you want to find that link and join us on a weekly Zoom, we do that on Wednesdays. It's our weekly buzz. It used to be Wine and Wine, but we changed it to our weekly buzz so that we were keeping with our bee theme. theme, and that is our beehive. And you can find all of that information on A Sensory Bee. And I just have to shout out to my coach, Marcia, that she has been amazing in this path of allowing me to grow and move into my calling and being able to help families have a voice and find out who they are and to know that they are exactly who they're meant to be.
I think that was powerful. I love it. I've never had a coach and a client on one show before, but I love it when things happen because now I can talk about this. I can reference this show. So I had a wonderful time, a wonderful way to end this incredible week that I've been having. So I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. It doesn't matter if you're watching it later today, 2 weeks from now, 4 months from now, or 8 years from now, we still need your support. Please go ahead and share the show. But I always ask, we appreciate you watching the show. We appreciate you sharing the show, but please go ahead and support our guests. Our guests are here this morning to be able to support you, to give you their information, their journey, their resources. So support them. Their website link is in the Facebook post, but I'll also ask, don't just visit their website, reach out to them, visit with them on social media, follow them, send them that message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.
Happy birthday.